You say you did it. I say you didn't. You say you worked hard. I say so did I. You say you worked hard. I say so did I. I say you got lucky. You say I didn't try. So you say it all worked. I say not for me. You say I didn't try. I say you just don't see why. You say I didn't try. I ask, can't you cry? You ask, why should I? I ask as I sigh. Why can't you see it? If we exist as I, too few will make it if we are only I. Folks, that's the whole question in life is how much do we care about others and how much do we sacrifice a little bit to make our world a better place? We're going to talk about all kinds of issues on this show. This is Lehigh Valley Discourse on WDIY, and I'm your host, Alan Jennings.
Phillips Armstrong isn't a household name. It sounds like some kind of business, like a law firm. It also sounds kind of Republican, like the guys who have butlers or drivers, you know, Home, Higgins. We'll find out whether he got beat up as a kid because his name wasn't Tom, Bill, Scott, John, or David. I was a little suspicious of this guy. Like, wait a minute, how can you be the county executive when I never worked with you or even met you? And he beat a friend, Brad Osborne, who'd been, I think, chair of the commissioners at the time and had been a commissioner for a number of years. And he beat him in an off year when disciplined suburban Republicans vote like crazy and lazy Democrats don't. Since meeting Phil, I've found him to be nothing along the lines of a blue blood. He is, in fact, a regular guy. He's a retired school teacher, a part-time bus driver, affable, and he cares about many of the same issues I care about. So, I'm Alan Jennings. I have the pleasure, the honor, the privilege of being able to host this show once a month and welcome you to the June 13th, 2019 edition of Lehigh Valley Discourse on WDIY, Lehigh Valley Public Radio. My guest tonight is indeed Mr. Nice Guy, the Lehigh County Executive, Phillips Armstrong. Phil, welcome.
Thank you very much. And the S on the end of the name, the only reason that's there, my mother's maiden name was Adeline Phillips, and she had 11 brothers and sisters. In fact, my last uncle just passed away several weeks ago. He was a navigator in the Marine Corps in World War II. So the last of the Phillipses. But I'm here to carry on that first name as my I have the two last names. I was always was called the boy with the two last names.
Yeah, yeah. Well, so you never got beat up on the playground for not being named?
No, I tried to learn how to take care of myself.
It's like the
boy
named Sue, remember?
Absolutely.
It's not quite that bad.
No, but it did have its ridicule that went with it, as every name does. So.
Well, yeah. So what's up with the nice guy thing? A lot of Democrats are sort of edgy, you know, angry people, class conscious, and, you know, angry about the injustice of the world. I swear Billy Joel wrote Angry Young Man with me in mind. So and every time I see you, you're smiling, you're friendly, you never seem to be in a bad mood, you never seem to have had a bad day. What are you getting at?
Well, my entire life, I think I have had that kind of demeanor that I'm just happy when I wake up in the morning and I'm looking at grass downward. And I think there's so many things that we have to be thankful for and grateful for. And I've had just the greatest life. I did grow up with sharing a bedroom where my brother kicked me out of bed every morning. And, you know, my mother would fill the bathtub up and we'd take turns getting in and out of it.
So, the same bathwater.
Oh,
right?
Absolutely. And you never thought anything was wrong with that.
Oh, my God.
You know, that was just normal. Yeah. And just all of the benefits that I had. But I remember graduating high school and everybody was having parties. And I asked my mother if I could have one. And she said, you didn't do anything yet. And you don't get a party in the Armstrong clan until you do something. After I graduated college, got my master's, still
gig.
She came to when I was inducted into the Hall of Fame for coaching. And she did say, I think you did something now. So
well, there you go. Well, you know, not to get too deeply into the scars of our childhood, my mother was the kind of person who, when I went out for the volleyball team in high school, she said, why are you going out for sports? You know you're not an athlete. So, you know, for most kids, I think that would be crushing. For me, it was like, really? you know, and I was the first all-league player from UMass and the first captain of the team, you know. That was what fired me up. It's what motivated me.
And I think they were very, very good at that. And my children often say when they see these things with the next generation of children that I never let them win when we played games in the backyard.
I didn't either. I never believed in it. And I think learning how to lose is an important part of what life.
I think so very, very much. You have to learn how to adjust, you know. And in coaching, and I was just, the Whitehall volleyball team just got knocked off on Saturday.
I saw that.
And the coach was somebody that was in my department and a good friend of mine. And the sad part about coaching is unless you win the state championship, you're going to lose. Yeah. You're going to end the year with a loss. And you have to learn how to deal with that.
Right. Yep.
Which I guess is a good thing for politics.
Well, let's talk about let's get into the politics. So first, let me ask you: is there anything or any element or any aspect of what's going on out there? Any issue that really fires you up? I mean, you just get you dug in and you're not going to equivocate. You're not going to compromise. I mean, is there anything out there that really does that?
Well, I think there's two issues for me: education and environment. Are two very major things that I'm concerned about. What upsets me, I guess, the most in my job is in politics and government, we tend to put the money after a problem occurred. The opioid crisis,
instead
for example.
Prevention.
You know, instead of looking at the beginning, what can we do? The homeless problem, the job problem. We need to go back to the beginning at these problems and look at what we can do. And I think, at least in the 2 years I've been in office now, I've tried to get more emphasis on what can we do to prevent things than, oh my gosh, this has happened. Now, how do we handle it?
Well, that requires some foresight and vision that a lot of people, you know, put a squelch to real fast because they think you're going to make them pay more taxes and spend more money, which, of course, sometimes you have to, and there's not anything wrong with that.
No, and actually, I think you would agree with me on this. Sometimes, you know, we did a program in Whitehall when I was the president of the board called the Community That Cares program. For every $1 that was spent in that program, we had data to prove we saved $9 down the road. I tried to take that program countywide in my first budget, but it required $35,000 in the budget, and it was rejected.
That was more than they were willing to spend.
Yes, yes. So that's the frustrating part, yes.
What motivated you to run for county executive?
Well, you know, that's kind of a funny story because I never thought about running for county executive. Wasn't anything in my dreams. I loved being the president of the board of Whitehall Township, the commissioners, and I thought I was doing a good job there. And I was asked to breakfast one morning by the former county executive, Tom Muller. I really didn't know why I was getting a free breakfast, but he said he had heard about some of the things I had done in Whitehall, thought I'd be a good candidate. I said, give me a couple of days and I'll think about it. And I did, and then I said no. Huh. Then Pete Schweier, Mike Schlossberg, Rick Mulchaney.
Ganged up on you.
Ganged up on me. And then I thought, okay, I was kind of living a semi-retired life, and I needed more action. So jumped into it.
What was the calculus that led you to believe you could win? I had not heard of you at that point. You know, I don't deal with the suburbs a whole lot because that's not where most of the poverty is. But Whitehall's got its share of problems.
Yes, we do.
So, what was the calculus that made you think I can go from Phillips Armstrong, township chairman of the township supervisors, to the guy that runs the county of Lehigh?
Well, there were a couple of things, but I thought first of all. As county executive, I could make a difference. You know, you see people running for Congress and the State House and the State Senate, and you hear about how they are so frustrated. I thought locally, politics to me shouldn't matter locally. The things
you mean
that,
the partisan aspect
the
of
partisan
it,
Democrat versus, yes, yeah. The major issues
you.
That you're looking at in the Republican and Democratic Party should not apply on a local level. It's, you know, in Whitehall, if your garbage isn't picked up, you don't care if the person running the town is a Republican. You want that issue taken care of. So that was a big reason why I thought, I'm going to go for this, because I think I can. There's the number of things I thought we could do better. One of them, I was worried about Cedarbrook, because they were talking about possibly selling Cedarbrook. And that, to me, is a safety net I never want to see us walk away from. In fact, just came from a meeting with a woman who worked at the Montgomery County home, and they sold it. They got out of the county business. That's been sold three times since then.
Oh, man.
So you know what happens to the quality of care then.
Yeah. Yeah, I tend to agree. I mean, there are certain things that that government just has to do. And there are so many people out there whose approach is that, and you know, government shouldn't do anything but defend the country and help rich people get rich, you know?
Yeah, there's a lot of that going on right now.
And they're having a fair amount of success, aren't they?
Yes. But, no, I think in county government, things like Cedarbrook, things like our juvenile probation and our criminal justice system, all of these things we're meeting, as you probably realize, government has worked in silos, where every individual group worked on an individual, and that's not the most efficient way. Mm-hmm. So I've been trying to combine things, trying to see, you know, we're going to be putting in our budget, hopefully it'll get passed, bringing in a social worker to work in our public defender's office, because we're now having attorneys doing that kind of work, and that's not, you know, economically feasible. And it could also help with, and I met with the president judge this week, and Judge Reedman has been a tremendous help for us.
Yeah, Ed is terrific.
He is a great guy. And we're looking at how can we work to help people from the time of the arrest through the process and even out into a job. Then we're working with Workforce Board, with Nancy Dishnot, on employment opportunities. So combining things mm-hmm. is really one of my big goals.
You've had 2 years. What would you say you're most proud of in terms of your accomplishments to date?
Well, number one, we just got the new addition. We're building a four-story addition onto Cedarbrook. That's been 5 years planning, 5 years of... So I think that's one of my greatest accomplishments at this point, that we are finally moving in that direction. I think it should have been done years ago, but it's taken a while. I think also the idea of looking at combining services. I think in the criminal justice system, we've made some strides that it's just going to make it better.
So just on the converse of that, what's disappointed you most about your tenure? Let's start with your relationship with your legislature, you know, your 9-member county commissioner board.
Well, I went in there knowing there hadn't been a great relationship prior. So
Tom liked to taunt. I mean, Tom was like, he's like me. He was like a natural fighter.
Yes. And, you know, teaching you have to learn to not be that way. I always said you want to take the wind out of their sails. Mm. So the first thing I did, there was actually a sign over my door that said, "Commissioners, welcome." I thought it meant "Commissioners, welcome." They said it was just the opposite. I tore it down immediately.
Why did they say that? They just assumed that you were going to be just like Tom?
Or I don't know. But if they wanted it down, it came down. Then the second thing, they asked if they could get the unaudited budget sooner. it's not really done and audited till about May, but we get it the end of January, but it doesn't change that
much.
You're
on a calendar year?
Yes. Yeah. And I said, if you want it, you can have it. Then they asked not to surprise them with things like the night of the meeting or things like that. So we have a leadership meeting now. We try to propose things weeks in advance so they know it's coming, months in advance. So those are the things I've done. However, it sometimes hasn't been reciprocal. So we still have some distance to go yet, I guess.
Yeah. You've hired some good people that I think have done a pretty good job. I mean, you've got Frank Kane, who's been there in the community development role now for, I think, going back to Don Cunningham's time. You've got Josh Siegel, who was just affirmed by the voters of Allentown, elected him to city council. You got Ed Hosa. You've got
Rick Mulchaney,
who has been very impressive to me in watching him on both the water issue and on our taking over, if you will, or merging with the seed farm. So are they making it easy enough for you to be able to go to the parades and the baby shaking and the hand kissing events?
Well, I think it's very, very important that you have those kind of people in place. And for the most part, all of those people were in place. They knew their job. They knew what they were doing. I did not believe in coming in and, sweeping clean. If somebody, and I don't care what your party affiliation is, if you're there, you were experienced, and you were doing a good job, we kept you. The only position I think we switched was the solicitor. And we're real happy we brought in Sarah Murray, who ended up being the youngest president of the Lehigh Valley Bar Association. So we're real proud with that hire, too.
Well, I'm an amateur at this. I'm a volunteer, and I often screw things up. And one of them is that I did not, until now, mention that you are listening to Lehigh Valley Discourse. I'm your host, Alan Jennings. My guest is Phil Armstrong, the Lehigh County Executive. This is WDIY, Lehigh Valley Public Radio. I've got to do that more regularly, because these are the folks who give us the opportunity to have these kinds of conversations, reach out to voters, help people understand what's going on better out there. I also want to thank Neil Heaver. Neil is a pioneer in the Lehigh Valley when it comes to community-based radio stations. He was at WMUH. He was a founder of WDIY. He's sitting over there at that gadgetry that I don't know if I could ever learn how to use, and hopefully making us sound like we know what we're doing here. So we're going to take a short break, and I hope you come back and join us as we talk to Phil Armstrong, our county executive in Lehigh County.
Not only is becoming a WDIY member a great way to support the programs you love, it has its benefits. WDIY members have access to our weekly member ticket giveaway emails, discover great concerts, theater performances, film screenings, and more, all while supporting the many choices and real voices on WDIY. Make your gift today at 610-694-8100 extension 7 or wdiy.org. Thank you.
Glad you could join us. This is Lehigh Valley Discourse on WDIY, Lehigh Valley Public Radio. I'm your host, Alan Jennings. I'm in real life, the executive director of the Community Action Committee of Lehigh Valley. I'm lucky enough to be able to host this show once a month, and happy to bring some of my friends and people I love to work with in various roles in our community, and to have them talk to you as the people that I think are the smartest radio listeners in Lehigh Valley. Phil, let me play what I call either or. I'm going to give you two opposing positions or opposing constituencies and ask you which one's side you would be on. So I could call it, whose side are you on? But
this is kind of like a Jeopardy challenge here. Okay.
Yeah. This is either or. Open space or warehouses?
Well, you know what? And I know this is going to sound political, but I think there's a compromise there that you can keep open space. But now with our regional planning, which we are doing for the first time, We have a southwest regional plan, a northwest regional plan in the county, where there are spots where warehouses are a good spot. It's employment. It's tax revenue. There are spots that we need to keep open. So I don't think you should, anybody should say yes to either side. I think it has to be a balance. And you don't, we rank number three in the state for preserving farmland. And I put $2 million in the budget to keep doing that. So I am definitely committed to open space. But you also need development.
All right, so you've picked up on how politicians pull this stuff off. So what I'm going to tell you is that if you equivocate on all these, I'm going to make you go back and pick sides, okay?
Okay. Well, I mean, and see, my entire career has been working compromises. And yeah. I think that's what our founding fathers did.
But part of the compromise is making sure the other side understands your position.
That's correct.
You know, so that's part of the deal. I mean, the thing that bothered me about President Obama was that he always seemed to do the compromise as his original proposal. And so there was nothing to back off of.
Yeah.
And so when Republicans would hold up his stuff, they'd be getting everything that was their side because he had already made his compromise. Yeah. You know what I mean? So how about this? Tax increase or service cuts?
Tax increase. That's easy. I last year proposed in a budget a $30 tax increase, and it was rejected. And this year now it's looking like we're going to have a larger structural deficit than planned. So
well, and if you remember, Jane Irvin had to do a big tax increase, and she did it because the people before her wouldn't do what needed to be done. She had the guts to do it, and she paid for it, which was unfortunate. And the next county executive went years without having to raise taxes because she did the courageous thing.
Well, and the fact is, we're looking at the tax rate used to be at 2.79 or 3.79. They lowered it several years ago.
They meaning the commissioners,
yes,
the Republicans on the
It's
board
a great thing to get you reelected.
Yeah.
There's no doubt about it. But if they had kept it at that, we would have
taxes.
Half. I mean, now we're going to go out on a $68 million bond. We would have only needed to go out on a $30 million bond. Mm. We would have had the best rating.
Rating is one of those long-term, it's like short-term pain, long-term gain.
Absolutely.
Because that bond rating means the rate you pay for the money you borrow would be significantly less.
And again, if taxpayers look in the long run.
Yeah.
But unfortunately, they don't.
Yep. Donald Trump or anyone else on the planet with a pulse?
Well, I don't know if I'd go as far as anyone else, but I'm definitely not a Donald Trump fan. There's too many tweets, too many.
Yeah, I'm trying not to get into this too deeply, but that's one of those.
Too many tweets.
You know,
Sometimes just I put my head down and shake it and go, oh
yeah,
my God.
That's pretty shocking.
Yes.
Okay,
climate. Could I add to that?
Yeah, sure.
I, back in 2008 to 2010, I was the secondary ed chairperson for the Middle States Council on Social Studies. And I got to be a lobbyist in Washington, D.C. And I met back then with congressmen and senators telling them that if they stopped teaching civics in high school and stopped teaching government, to just concentrate on the science and the math, which are definitely, you know, worthwhile, but so I felt was social studies, that things like this could happen in the future. And
yeah, civic life needs to be civic. I mean,
yes.
Civil, you know,
yep,
and it's
absolutely.
Not.
Absolutely. It's
climate change or radical lifestyle adjustments?
Oh, we need to do some lifestyle. We need to change how we're polluting our world, definitely. My daughter was a environmental major at Penn State, so
So you have no choice.
Oh, yes, but I think I was a little...
She knows where to find you. I mean,
yes, absolutely.
Yeah. The other way I was going to put this was our grandchildren's future or our own self-indulgence, because that's what I think is going on here. People that are walking the planet today are not thinking about their children or their grandchildren's future. The species is literally at risk here. And for us to turn our backs and actually advance it further in the wrong direction by bringing back coal is negligence of its in its worst form.
Oh, believe me, I grew up in the coal regions. And in fact, it was just the anniversary of the mine disaster in Wilkes-Barre last weekend. And what I saw, I mean, my own house back there, it was always black from the, even though it was painted white, from the fog and the dense pollution from the mines. You have to, we're only here to make sure this planet survives for our grandchildren,
for you.
Not for ourselves. And I definitely think we have to start looking more to the future.
What's amazing, Phil, is that this is really barely on Americans' radar screen. You ask them what are their top issues, it doesn't break the top 10.
No, and you know what's funny? I don't know if you knew this, but once a month I bring in students from the various school districts in Lehigh County.
That's cool.
And I've asked them to come up with a project that they think they can make a difference and actually work through it. They're not quite ready for a resolution to go in front of the commissioners. I think one more month before that's done. And they want to meet even through the summer. But they're going to bring an issue of hopefully getting the county to ban plastic straws. It's a start.
It's a start.
It's a start. And what's nice to see is the youth being concerned.
Participating.
And, yes.
Yeah, I'm with you.
Yeah. And these kids are just fantastic. I love working with them. And we bring them in once a month. And they've really focused and narrowed it down and want to bring a resolution in front of the board.
Cool. Way to go. Okay, so how about this one? Cornhole or shuffleboard?
I have to go with shuffleboard on that.
Yeah.
I don't have to bend over as much.
Yeah. Yeah, I get that.
Okay.
All right. An issue that I know you have an interest in, race. I don't get it. I don't understand why people prejudge others based on the way they look. I certainly don't know why they chose color of your skin. I don't know why they don't resent the fact that you and I have blue eyes, or that take us on because we have less hair than the average. What is it about the color of people's skin that gets people to do such hateful, irresponsible things?
Well, the sad part about that is, and I actually taught a course at the community college called Social Problems, and it dealt with race. And there wasn't even a word race till the 1300s, until people started traveling and seeing people. And
they looked different at that.
Yes, and then they developed these new words. And the words were meant so the Caucasians would be the superior, right, from the very, very beginning. On every form that I fill out when they ask race, I put human. We're all the same. It's just what climate did you grow up in, mm-hmm. where you adapted? And you have to understand, for thousands of years, there was no mobility. So, yes, cousins married cousins, and you developed traits, and you developed physical characteristics. But you are no different than, you know, if I go back thousands of years, I do believe we were all related at one time, you know. So we tried to teach real important that the fact is you're only who you are because of the environment that you came up with. And unfortunately, we do have stereotypes now that people are trying to say, and people are using things against other people. I just hired this morning, well, she will go in front of the board, an unbelievably well-qualified African-American woman to run my nursing at Cedar Brook.
Good.
And she was fantastic. But I said what I liked about her most, the smile lit up the entire room. Mm. But, you know, I think we just have to look at people and stop looking at color, religion. I'm about to appoint a Muslim to my Lehigh County authority, a retired department head from Air Products, a doctorate degree. There are some people out there that are so fantastically well qualified, and we just have to start dealing with them as people.
Yeah, and you know what I don't, I mean, it's just this, I spend so much time wrestling with this issue because, you know, my obsession is fairness. You know, I was a middle child, and you know, when you're a middle child, it's like, you know, my older brother got all the privilege, my younger brother got all the attention.
This and the bathwater first, too, yeah.
Yeah, you know, so I'm obsessed with fairness, and nobody has been treated worse than people of dark, you know, with dark skin. You know, yeah. We stole them from their families. We brought them here. We enslaved them. We never gave them the opportunities that they should have had when they were emancipated. We've held them back. We've stepped on their throats. And then we tell them they're not allowed to complain. You know, I mean, stop your belly aching. You know, I mean, that's just crazy.
We, again, being a social studies department chair in history, and we have not been a nice country. I mean, right. you teach our history. I mean, the Native Americans, we just about wiped them out of the planet Earth.
Yep.
And, you know, we have when you go to the great immigration of the 1900s, the Italians, the Jewish people, the Russians, the Polish, the Ukrainians, we had racial slurs for all of them.
Yeah.
And the thing with America, which I always thought was the greatest part of our country, is we hope to be a melting pot. We're not. We're still, I mean, when people move, they move to ghettos, which people have the wrong definition of a ghetto. It's only the same ethnic group living in the neighborhood. It has nothing to do with it being a slum or whatever. Mm. But they want it to be with people of the same kind. And now we're in the mixing part, really. And I think now is the time where you welcome these people. You look at what they can, why our country is great is because of the things they have given us.
The diversity.
Yeah.
Yeah. You know, you and I talked about an effort that we're working on, which is a conversation on race. We want to encourage as many groups as we possibly can to have a conversation about why do we have racism? What can we do to eradicate it? And at least until we eradicate, what can we do to minimize the pain that comes with that that racism? So what I'm hoping to do is develop a strategic plan for the region on addressing that issue, and hoping that the chamber and the and LVDC and the United Way and the Conference of Churches and you know the county executives, the mayors are all on board and agree that there are things we can do to fix this problem, and we owe it to people to do that. And I look forward to your being involved in that.
Phil. Well, I think, and again, in the equality idea too. I mean, my first month in office, I passed the gender equality proclamation that if you're going to do business, and I think we in government have to make sure that not just the people we employ, but the contractors that we employ to do our services are also not racist,
yes.
Are not, you know, excluding a
Absolutely.
Group of people.
Yep.
So I think, you know, we can do steps to actually, as you said, we can change things.
I think there's a lot of things that we can do that would be minimally painful and would take us in the right direction. And I think it's long overdue. So I look forward to making that happen. As you know, these are tough times. It's a pretty divided nation. People taking sides on almost every issue. We talked about your, you know, you having a board of commissioners. Let's just go a little bit further with the question. As I recall, you now have 3 Democrats out of 9.
Correct.
Right.
And that was the vote on the budget, 6-3.
Right. Yeah. So the 6 Republicans. My impression is they are more collaborative in spirit than the last board of commissioners in terms of, I mean, you've got Jeff Brace, Dan Hartzell, and the
Amy Zanelli.
Yeah, Amy Zanelli. And then you've got Marty Nelstein, Nate
Brown,
Percy Dougherty, Brad Osborne,
Mark Ramos and Amanda Holt.
Right. My impression is that they are nowhere near as dug in as my friend Vic Mezziotti was and others like that. Do you have an easier group than Tom or...
Well, there are several of those that for some issues have been easier. On some things, such as the Cedarbrook, it was not a unanimous vote, but we got enough votes to pass. So we have found that there are some of the newer elected officials, and they have been more open-minded to issues, more on the issue basis versus the party basis. But we still have a few dug-ins.
Yeah, well, you know, we did this, the transfer of the seed farm to my agency. And at one point, I was hearing some opposition to it, which I just couldn't even begin to understand. But eventually, you know, when we did the vote, we ended up with 9 yes votes. And I think that's a tribute to Rick and you. But I think it also probably says something about this board being a little bit easier to work with for somebody from the opposing party than one or two of your predecessors had.
Oh, and I agree. And
not to take anything away from you.
No, but we did a lot of lobbying for that. And it wasn't new to the board the night that you got there. We already had discussed all the pros and cons at the leadership meeting. And this is where we're trying to bridge that gap with the board. I think the leadership meetings are very, very important, that before we get to a public meeting and throw out all the dirty laundry, if you will, we discuss it back and forth at that meeting and let them know what are all the pros of you taking over the seed farm and the benefits. And I think we're very convincing, and you definitely had all the right answers, so it was an easy.
Well, my hope is that we can do a lot of good things with that entity that haven't been able to be possible until now, and I appreciate your support for that effort. You're listening to Lehigh Valley Discourse on WDIY, Lehigh Valley Public Radio. I'm your host, Alan Jennings. I have with me Phil Armstrong, who's been county executive now for a little bit around 2 years, and is an incredibly affable guy. I mean, I know a lot of people who are elected. You can't get elected very well without being likable, but likable is only part of the equation, and so I think Phil's got all those pieces in place, and I'm glad to have him here on the show. So the smartest listeners in Lehigh Valley, hope you'll stick around. We're going to take another quick break and come back with some more to talk about, including an interesting little surprise I have for those who are wondering what's going on with our former mayor in Allentown. Stay with us.
WDIY 88.1 offers many choices and real voices. Folk music, from folk classics to the Gaelic traditions of the British Isles, to bluegrass and old-time music of Appalachia, to the modern-day singer-songwriters telling the story of today's world. You'll find it all here on WDIY. Listen and enjoy the wide variety of folk music every weekday evening, 7 to 9 p.m., just after NPR News headlines, and Sunday mornings at 11 a.m. on 88.1 WDIY and streaming at WDIY.org.
Okay, welcome back. This is Lehigh Valley Discourse on WDIY, Lehigh Valley Public Radio. I'm your host, Alan Jennings. I have the pleasure, the privilege of having Phil Armstrong with me in the studio. We're talking about county government. Phil is, of course, the county executive in Lehigh County. I started the show by saying that Phillips Armstrong was not a household name. I think it won't be too long before he is one, if he isn't already. I don't know if many people know this, but county government's primary responsibilities are really the court system and human services, including the county home, which we all know as Cedarbrook. The prison system, you've got a higher count than you should, in part, as I understand it from talking to the president judge. People in the prison or the jail who have served their time and can't get out because they have no place to go. They have no home to call their own. And you rightly, I think, give them a place to live. I mean, it's 3 hots and a cot. But Ed thinks that we could develop housing for some of these folks and empty out the jail a little bit and save some money. What are you looking at on the court system? Is there anything that you're thinking about doing?
Well, and as I said earlier, that's one of the meetings Ed and Kim McCool, my public defender, and I had, and we brought the court administrator in, and we're looking at things with this new position, hopefully that I can get in the budget, as a social worker, where we can maybe help get some of these people out in a transition. We need to start working with the judges on sometimes they're not getting out because we don't have an address. And, you know, the Salvation Army says, well, they can stay there and the judge won't accept that.
Right.
So there are things that we need to get people working together on. So, yes, there are people, and I think mental health issues.
Absolutely.
When they closed the state hospitals, we have people that don't belong in jail, but the facilities for them, it's sad that the state has kind of said this should be a county problem, not a state problem anymore.
Yeah, but it raises the issue of affordable housing, too. I mean, okay,
absolutely.
You've got people who can't get to jobs because where the affordable housing is an hour and a half bus ride to the suburbs. The suburbs don't have much affordable housing at all. So you've got that issue. You've got work companies that can't find workers because they can't get them to their jobs. You've got this issue of the jails filled up and they can't empty out some of those cells and they're spending more money doing it. At some point, the people in power, and I'm not even talking about the county executive because your power is limited, but I'm talking really about the business community at some point stepping up and saying, look, we've got to take on this problem. It's got to be addressed. We can't continue to have all the poor people in the city of Allentown bringing down the schools, you know, with all the service demands and so on. So, you know, I don't know how much you've thought about affordable housing, but I think this is one issue that really needs to be on everybody's agenda.
When I was president of the board of Whitehall Township, Pat Stone had come in and took a factory.
That was the first time I heard your name, by the way.
Okay, and it took a factory that was sitting there abandoned for 40 years and came up with
a source of blight.
Yeah, an excellent plan.
Yep.
But we ran into the not in our neighborhood syndrome, and we worked out a compromise with them, and it worked out real well. There was no
And you court. Avoided court?
We avoided court. Which I thought was...
Because you had a fair housing claim. That was a good one. That
right. It really was. Unfortunately, it still hasn't gone ahead because a neighbor, I won't get into that one, owns something and has still filed something that is tying that up.
Abatia is one of the most challenging people there is in Lehigh Valley. I said that. You didn't.
I didn't say that. But so it still hasn't moved forward. But yeah, you have to look at... You know, when you said something earlier, and this is my pet peeve, I guess, about government, we will spend more money keeping somebody in jail, feeding them, guarding them, giving them medical, versus maybe taking money and providing housing for them on the outside, which would be cheaper,
right,
and we would be saving money in the long run. But again, mindsets.
Yep. Let's talk about where you're going from here. We talked about looking back and what you're proud of. What do you still hope to accomplish in the next 2 years, assuming for now that you're not running for county executive? If your term was up in 2 years, you have 2 years. What do you hope to accomplish?
Well, what I hope to get accomplished is things such as keeping going with Cedar Brook, modernizing it, hopefully then after the new wing, remodeling the D wing and getting that up to par. I hope to, we have a problem in our juvenile, we're averaging about 6 to 7 juvenile delinquents that need to be housed. We're farming them out to different spots around the state. Hmm. That's an issue that we have to look at. We have a facility that we shut down, which would cost.
Over by Cedar Brook?
Yes.
That's shut down?
Yes, it did.
I didn't know that.
Well, it was built as a juvenile prison and holds 44 prisoners. Well, there's no need for that. There was, you know, and the fact is it is a prison. And that's not how you, again, how you want to deal with juveniles. So we brought the state in. I had a conference where we brought the people in from the state to say, is there money where maybe we could get to convert this to an all-purpose facility, rehab, you know, things to that nature? And there is none, and the state doesn't want anything to do with county juvenile problems either. So there's things that I think we need to put pressure on the state to public defender's office. That's completely funded by the county.
And underfunded, really.
Yes, but and every county's different. Mm-hmm. And every county does something different in their offices. So there needs to be some work with the state. And we've had excellent relationships with Pat Brown, Mike Schlossberg, Jeannie McNeil, Pete Schweier. They have been really great with us. So you need, and that, by the way, those are two different parties that I'm actually, and I think we, and even Senator Casey and Senator Toomey, we've gone to at times.
Who do you like for president? Have you started thinking that one yet?
There's too many right now. Yeah. I needed to narrow it down a little bit. Yeah. Right now, I'm kind of a middle-of-the-road guy, so I want to see somebody, a middle-of-the-road person, not I've never been far right or far left, so I'm going to wait to see. I'm not throwing, you know, it's just like in the primary.
At some point, they're going to be coming after you wanting an endorsement.
Yes, I know, pretty soon. And I need to study more of the issues that they're all saying. You know, right now they're all basically saying the same thing. Mm-hmm. So I want to see who really separates themselves. And, you know, I'm going to say this about every voter everywhere. A woman from Norway said before they vote in Norway, you should ask three questions. One, would you want that person to be your next door neighbor? Two, would you want that person to teach your children? And three, would you buy a used car from them? I love those. I've got that to memory. And you know what? I think if we use that for voting and maybe got away from, you know, this is an R or this is a D and answered those three questions.
Politics is such an interesting sport. You know, there are so many different elements, so many different ways you can interpret what's a good politician, what's a not a good politician. And there are so many gray areas. You know, here's one that wasn't perhaps so gray, and that is the tragedy of Ed Pawlowski. I think one of the arguments you could make is that you were helped by his candidacy because the voter turnout in Allentown was higher than normal, which means more Democrats voted, which means that you could beat a popular Republican county commissioner. And so, I mean, I think most people know that I consider, you know, Ed and I are friends, and I felt bad for him throughout this whole ordeal. And so, Ed and I talk, we get a chance to correspond. I'm going to read a letter that Ed sent me that just, I'd be interested in your thoughts. He says, Dear Alan, how are you doing? I thought I would write and give you an update on what I've been up to lately. I'm keeping myself busy as I wait on the appeal to make its way through the court system. I have a new job in the construction management department overseeing projects throughout the facility. I'm teaching a class on understanding government for another semester and also taking a class on understanding, and also taking a beginner's Hebrew and Spanish class. I'm also trying to lose weight, working out, participating in yoga, and leading a bocce ball team. I play drums now in two different bands and lead a Bible study and prayer group in my unit. I also spend a large amount of time researching our legal cases for my appeal and helping other inmates fill out immigration paperwork. I think I've read over 600 cases to date. At this point, I'm going to skip law school and just take the bar exam when I get out. He says that it all helps to kill time as I wait my appeal. Speaking of the appeal, it was submitted on May 11th. It gets assigned to a 3-judge panel of appellate court judges. The government now has 30 days to respond. We then have 20 days to respond to them. And we have oral arguments before the court sometime in August or early September. Hopefully I will then have a decision from the court in September, October. Man, says, please pray I get three good, fair, honest, thoughtful, wise, compassionate, and merciful judges who will see the injustice in this case and exonerate me. Pray for my attorney, Jack, that he will have the wisdom and ability to make powerful arguments before the court and adequately convince the judges of my innocence. He goes on to say, I have not started reading your book yet, was focusing all my energy on the appeal. I'm planning on doing that now. I'm leaving out the last sentence or two. I read that and I was amazed. I mean, he seems almost like he's having fun.
Well, he's definitely making good use of his time, I would say.
And the resilience, though, if that were me, I'd be broken. I don't know where he gets the strength of his optimism.
Well, I think it's one of the most sad parts of politics that, as mayor, he was very well liked, very well respected, and the wonderful things he did for Allentown. I think his campaign manager, Mr. Fleck, took him down the wrong road.
I agree, and Fleck only got five years.
Yes, yeah. Well, it's the truth about the court system. You plead guilty and plead guilty early, you get the best.
Well, and people said he wasn't contrite and didn't apologize. Well, he's appealing. Why would if apology is essentially a confession?
Well, and at a certain point when the evidence stacks up, I think it's the best thing to do when the evidence stacks up.
The whole thing is so tragic, they said they were throwing the book at him essentially to send a message. What was the message that you got?
Well, I don't know if it was. I'm not running for anything other than the county executive. I think for people who do want to run for higher office, and the problem with that anymore, and one of the proudest things I have to say about my election was I spent the least amount of money of any candidate.
That is a good reason to be proud.
I am. I'm very proud because I didn't think money should determine whether you win or lose. I think going to everything, and I still go to everything, but I think letting the people know who you are and where you at, and not how many radio ads or billboards, but the fact is, running for office on a higher level, it's all coming down to money anymore.
Yeah, well, I think that's probably the plainest message in this, is that the way we fund campaigns has got to change. I mean, it's just got to change. This is crazy, the amount of money they're spending on. I mean, how much did you raise for your campaign?
I think I raised somewhere around $38,000.
See, that's remarkable that you were able to win that election on spending so little.
Well, and again, I went to everything, and I still am. I think it's very important that you get out there with the people, and not, the brochures, the billboards, and the radio ads, and all of that is, if they don't meet you, if they don't see you, I knocked on 16,640 doors.
Wow.
The thing, you have to put the effort in.
Is it too early to ask you whether you plan on running for
re-election? Oh, I'm definitely running.
You are? Okay.
I'm definitely running.
Have you started raising money yet, or do you have money left over?
I had money left over. I didn't even spend it all. I had one fundraiser a couple of months ago, and I don't plan on, buying the Cadillac kind of a plan to run again. Right. People know me for 4 years. I attend every municipal meeting once a year. So I get out, I find out what's going on in Albertus and Macungie and Lowell Township, Weisenberg, I think
that's you were at the Board of Commissioners meeting, and I've been at plenty of commissioners meetings where I never saw the county executive, whoever it was.
Well, I get to that. One part of the job that I really love is I'm also on the Planning Commission. I'm also on the Board of Governors for the Chamber of Commerce. I'm on the LVDC, or EDC. There's so many initials.
Yeah.
And all of that is part of being the county executive, and I love that.
And you like shaking babies and kissing hands.
I, Yes, I do. Absolutely.
You know, the Second Harvest Food Bank gets state grant money that goes through the county, and we then use that money to buy food. And we have, you know, we have to raise money all the time to subsidize this operation. We help feed 60,000 people a month, which is a frightening number. And we approach those vendors from whom we buy food for donations, and we never get contributions from them. That makes me want to not buy any more food from them. You know what I mean? I don't know if that gets close to pay to play, but I mean, I think that's an understandable thing, you know, that shouldn't they have some skin in that game, you know?
Well, yeah, you would think if you're providing, but again, with the contract or the ethics rules for the county, it's very clear $250 is all I could take if anybody is doing business with the county.
Right.
But I'm not going to do one thing or another. I've always thought of myself as ethical. I hope to continue that way.
Well, the entire course of this interview, I don't think I saw you lose that smile once. So I don't know how you do that. I wish I could could be as affable and as friendly as you are, Phil. We're going to have to wrap up in just a couple of minutes. I think that bragging is a good thing. I mean, I don't think you should be a jerk about it, but I think, you know, people should know when you do something that you think is worthy. I think it should be therapeutic to be able to say, that's right, I did that. So let me give you the last minute or so to brag about your work as county executive.
Well, you know, I'm
not... Think of it as your kickoff of your reelection campaign.
Okay. Well, I don't want to brag about the big things. It's the little things. I had a 92-year-old gentleman whose house was flooded with the rains, and we were able to find a temporary place of residence, but we were running on... We did the extra step. We found out he had a relative in Vermont and found him a spot till we could get his house fixed. You know, when you do little things like that...
The fact that you even know you did that is pretty impressive.
Well, but see, I think that's the kind of thing instead of, you know, you might not change the world, but if you can help out a 92-year-old person...
Paid his taxes.
Oh, yeah. And our Department of Veterans Affairs, when we got that tank to come and pick up that veteran at his home in Allentown.
How cool was that?
If you didn't have a tear in your eye looking at that, you know, those are the kinds of services that I hope marks my reign as county executive.
Well, I think you deserve to have that opportunity to brag, and I'm glad we gave you the opportunity. We've got about a minute left. Let me ask you about your relationship with the union. The SEIU was at a commissioner's meeting recently appealing for more support. I got to tell you that the people who work in children and youth have excruciatingly stressful work. Is there anything you can do on that front?
Well, I think, the only county executive that doesn't negotiate contracts. Our board, and this was a fight between the executive and the former board, and they took that away from the county executive. But I'm happy to say I think that contract has been settled. Yes, I think that, in fact, it was about 1 or 2 days right after the last meeting that it was settled.
Well, that's the last word here, Phil. Thanks for joining me. You've been listening to Phil Armstrong, Lehigh County Executive, with me. I'm Alan Jennings, host of Lehigh Valley Discourse. This is WDIY, Lehigh Valley Public Radio. Thanks for listening. I'll be back next month with another interesting guest.